Good morning, Abotai. We're continuing our study in Eshet Chayil. We are in the fourth pasuk. Daresha Semer Ufishtim. We're talking about the greatness of a person who seeks wool and linen. Wool, as we explain, is Chesed. She's constantly looking to show her kindness and her warmth, and Pishtim, she doesn't forget that there is another side to raising children and raising people in general, which is Din, to be strong, to be sturdy, to be demanding, to be raising. Those two come together. One without the other, or one mixed into the wrong place, can create shatnez, create something that's not good. If you notice that the semer was mentioned before the pishtim, it doesn't say daresha pishtim v'tzemer. The order is wool and then linen. That has great significance. It's important to know that in the world of a child, not only little children, could be older people as well, anyone who's under somebody, whether it's in the house or in the office or it's in the yeshiva, anyone who's under somebody very often feels constantly attacked. Nobody's really attacking it, but he feels attacked. A little child, for example, from everywhere, from his mother, his father, his brother, his uncle, his grandpa, his grandma, goes to school, his teachers, his principals, everyone's telling him what to do. Gotta do this, you can't do that. You have to know that a child, in general, is receiving hundreds of commandments a day. Wake up, go to sleep, get dressed, go to bed. Hundreds of commandments a day that he is receiving from these older people that are surrounding him. But the nature of a human being is that they don't like to be commanded. Imagine, put yourself in a child's shoes and 100 times a day someone's telling you what to do. Try it even once. Once in a while I tell someone what to do. I'm a rabbi, but tell them what to do. They get angry. Yeah, he got angry. If we would be in their position, already by the second commandment, we would be flipping out on the person. The nature of a human being is that they don't like to be told what to do. Not by their mother, not by their father, and not even by their rabbis. The nature of a human being is such. And you have to know that it can be very frustrating for a young person to constantly hear what he needs to do or what she needs to do. As a father, a mother, as a teacher, rabbi, as an employer, you must know this reality that is human. We don't like to be told what to do. Obviously, we need to tell people what to do. Children have to be told what to do. Students have to be told what to do. Employees have to be told what to do. So it's a reality in life, but it's a reality that comes with a big danger. On one hand, you must direct people, especially if you care for them and you want them to succeed. Someone who doesn't direct others when they're in need of it, obviously doesn't care about them. I mean,
I don't direct any random person I see in the street. I don't go next door to my neighbor and start directing his children. Not because I don't care about them, but they're not my children.
Generally speaking, the people that we're closest to and the people that we love most are the people that we direct the most. That's why you'll find that the most strained relationships in society is specifically from the people who love each other the most. It's an interesting thing. You might think that hatred or difficult relationships are between strangers. That's what it would seem like. But in reality, the overwhelming issues of relationships are with people that are actually very close and actually love each other. At least one side loves the other. It's very interesting. Where does that dynamic develop? Very simple. Because when you love someone, then you have a responsibility and a desire to help them. That's what love represents. Not just I love you, but I will do what I can to make you successful. Since I want to make you successful, I'm going to tell you what you should be doing. Problem is, you don't like to be told what to do. So we have a dynamic that's very difficult. On one hand, the way I show you love is by telling you what to do. I don't tell others, I tell you. What am I telling you for? Because I love you. On the other hand, the recipient is feeling attacked because he doesn't like to be told what to do. So this is an impossible situation. On one hand, if you don't tell them, so you don't care for them. On the other hand, you tell them, they get angry. And all they want to do is just stay away from you. So we got a big problem. This is a dynamic of human relationships that must be figured out, because any mistake on either side is a terrible result. If you decide I'm not going to direct the people that are close to me, so then you failed in life. You haven't helped the people that you love. Can't be much bigger failures than that. But to get them to go and tell them, and that they should be resentful is the right word, or perhaps they're rebellious, in other word, or things of that nature. There are different levels of that. So how does a person solve this critical dynamic of caring relationships? You don't say something, you're no good. You say something, it may be no good too. So you get stuck. You can't really choose a safe option. There are no safe options. You have to go in the water. Sometimes a person could choose not to swim. So I won't swim. If there's danger ahead, like we do safek berachot lehakel, when we have a safek in saying God's name in vain, we take the safe way out. So don't make a beracha. Sometimes in life, when there is danger, you go to safety. But in this situation, there is no safety, because you have no choice but to jump in the water, and you gotta figure out how to swim. You can't say, well, since it's dangerous to swim, I'm gonna stay out of the water. It doesn't work. And to go in the water without learning how to swim is also a problem. So we gotta learn how to go in the water and swim. So obviously Hashem would not create a dynamic in relationships, especially the most important ones, without giving us a solution. So there clearly is a solution, but it's not an easy solution. But first we have to be aware of the problem. This is the problem we have. You have a little child in your home. That little child could be 30, by the way. So you have a little child in your home. You have to know, first, beware of this dynamic. Even when he's one or two, he's already in this reality. A parent who doesn't know such a reality a teacher who doesn't know this reality, an employer doesn't know this reality, is for sure gonna face failure. Maybe not total failure, but clearly being unaware of this means you're gonna be in the water and you're not even gonna swim. At least when you try to swim, you can figure things out. So number one, the biggest gift I can give somebody is make him aware that the people you care about the most and you want to guide most are not very receptive of you constantly telling them what to do, even if they're little. Once you've received the gift and you understand this reality, sometimes, like I said, understanding the challenge is the biggest gift. Because once we know there's a challenge, so then we start to either look for solutions outside of ourselves or even within ourselves. Once we know this reality, we come to this pasuk and it gives us tremendous guidance. The Eshet Hayil seeks wool and then linen. Now this is a hidush. Let me tell you why it's a hidush. In our relationship with Hashem, it is generally understood that fear of God, being afraid of Hashem, comes before love of Hashem. Love of Hashem takes a lot more maturity to be able to love Hashem. To fear Hashem, you don't have to be so mature. For example, even a little child can be mature enough not to put his hand in a fire, but may not be mature enough when they cross the street. Meaning when it comes to fear, it takes less maturity to be afraid of something than to understand the connection to something. So being afraid of fire or being afraid of cars coming or being afraid of things, it's easier for a young person to connect to than to connect to a relationship that's built on emotion and love. So bottom line, fear is easier to connect to than the emotion of love. So therefore, when we want to connect to Hashem, we're not yet built spiritually to love Hashem. That takes investment, it takes sacrifice, it takes learning His wisdom and connecting to Him. It takes learning the world that He created and seeing the tremendous kindness in the world that He made. It's a avodah. Avraham Avinu worked many years to develop a love and appreciation of the Creator. But fear of Hashem, there's different levels of fear. There's fearing punishment. There's fearing in the sense that you're in awe. Fear of God, generally speaking, comes before love of God. You cannot expect a 13-year-old boy to love Hashem. He could say the words, but he's not really capable of a real connection of ahava. But to fear God, he can. That's something that he's more capable. I'm not saying it's automatic, but it's easier. So the general ladder of this relationship between us and Hashem is you first have fear, and then you graduate over time to love, to ahava. Ahavat Hashem, it's a very high reality of a relationship. When it comes to a father-child or mother-child relationship, or a rabbi-student, teacher-student, it doesn't work like that. This I heard from the great Mashgiach of Lakewood, Alav HaShalom, Rabbi Solomon. And this is the first time I saw a pasuk that might be a proof to what he said, the one that we're learning. Rabbi Solomon says that when it comes to our relationship with our children or our students or our employees, the first thing has to be that we build love. What does that mean, we build love? It means from our end, we have to invest in love. In truth, it's not really different than what Hashem has with us. Let me explain, which may be what he means that. When we speak about Hashem and us, we speak about our fear of God and our love of God. It's coming from us to Him. What he's talking about is how a father and mother, rabbi, teacher, is giving to his child. Meaning, how Hashem gives to us. It's really not a contradiction. It's just looking at the relationship from a different angle. When it comes to a child, to us, towards Hashem, it's fear, and then we elevate to love him. But when we talk about the parents towards the child, you're looking from a different angle. What does the parent have to do? And what are the expectations that he needs to put in from his child? And that doesn't have to be the same as the other way. So he says that the parents, before they can demand, which is more fear, when you tell your son what to do, that's called yir'ah. That's called fear, because you're not asking him, you're not consulting with him, you're not doing something that he necessarily wants. So whenever you give a command, that's in the area of yir'ah. It's in the area of fear. It's not that you fear him, it's that you're expecting him to follow out of fear, because he very often doesn't see the need to follow what you're asking. He doesn't see the need to do what you're saying to do. So why would he do it? Because he's afraid of you. So whenever you give a commandment to someone who doesn't really want to do it or doesn't understand why they should do it, so basically you're expecting them to follow out of fear. Fear of losing their job, fear of losing their seat in the classroom, or fear of losing certain rights in a home. Whenever we give a command, we're expecting them to follow out of fear. Before we can demand, which means ask them to fear us, we must first invest in ahava. We must first invest in the love that we give them, which Hashem really does the same. Hashem also gives us and gives us and gives us and only asks us to follow when we're 13 years old. 12 years old. Hashem, in theory, could have created us from the beginning with commandments that we would need to fulfill. But for the first 12 or 13 years of our lives, we don't have any commandments. Hashem says, I'm not commanding you.
I'm not telling you what to do.
Now, we would say, oh, because we're not mature yet. Yeah, but you have to remember, God made it that way. Hashem could have easily made us mature on day one of our lives. Animals, the day they're born, they're already ready to start the world. They're moving, they're walking, they're doing their own thing. So God could have made it that we come into this world and we're ready to be commanded. But He doesn't do that. 12, 13 years go by before He can tell us to do something. What is that time for? What is going on in the relationship during that time? The answer is, Hashem is giving us love. All He does is give us life, food, enjoyment. All the things that we have in life is an expression of Hashem's love. And through the 12 or 13 years, hopefully, it's not an automatic, but hopefully that person will feel the love. He has at least something to build on. And after they feel the love, now they're ready to be commanded. Now they're ready to do something out of fear. So what Rabbi Solomon is saying is not different, really, than our relationship with Hashem. It's just looking at it from God's angle. When we are dealing with our children, we're looking at it from His angle. And from His angle, there has to be an investment of love, and only then can you expect the child to fear and to do it out of fear. It's a very critical information. The order here makes all the difference. According to what we're saying, if we give commands before there is a strong feeling of love, so we're building on a bankrupt bank account. Imagine you go to the bank to withdraw $1 million. And there's nothing in the bank. You can't take out money from an account that's empty. If you fill it and keep filling, depositing every day, then one day you can come and take out the money. A person who expects the people that he cares for to listen out of fear without investing is asking for a withdrawal without deposits. Because every time you tell someone what to do, you have to remember it's a withdrawal. Why is it a withdrawal? Because in essence, they don't want to follow what you say. Even if you're right. But they don't want to do it because you said it. Or they may not think it's right altogether. So you're asking for a withdrawal. You're asking them to do it out of fear. Just because you said. To make withdrawals in the relationship, you better have deposited plenty before you can in a healthy way, ask to take out. What is the deposit in a relationship? It's called ahava. The withdrawal is called yirah. And it has to be in that order. You can't make withdrawals before you make deposits. That's obvious. Darasha Semer Ufishtim, in that order. The Eshet Hayil understands this dynamic and understands that you have to constantly be involved in Ahava. And then and only then can you expect Yir'ah in the relationship. And remember, every time you ask something of someone, You're basically asking for yir'ah. Now, the truth is that this concept seems to be unnecessary, at least for parents. Maybe rabbis, teachers, students, they need to learn this principle because maybe the love doesn't come naturally to them for their students. But when it comes to parents, it seems to be an unnecessary piece of advice, being that every normal father and mother love their children. So when a father and mother hear this, they automatically check out, not because they don't like the advice, because they feel that they're plenty invested in the love that they show and give and feel for their children. So therefore, it's like giving a class on unbelievable information that everyone's already doing. It's like coming in with a hidush, telling people, listen, tremendous hidush. You have to eat at least once a day. Because if you don't eat, you're going to have all kinds of terrible things. People walk out and say, wow, what a piece of wisdom. It's true. If you don't eat, we're going to have issues. But there's no value to that class because everyone eats. And everyone knows that. Whether they know it's important or not, it doesn't make a difference. They're all eating. So in this case, who doesn't love their children? What are we talking about? So this is one of the biggest mistakes that a father or mother can make. Very, very big mistake. And you must know that. That the ahava, that the love investment, the semer that we're talking about, is not from your perspective, it's from their perspective. And that's a very big challenge. It doesn't really matter how much you love your children. That's not what gets deposited in their bank account. The deposits are only when the ahava has reached them. Now you might say, well, what's in between? If I love someone or I do something out of love, doesn't that automatically get deposited? And the answer is an absolute no. It's possible to think that we're depositing all kinds of love, and we could prove it. How many times have you heard a father say, you know what I've done for these kids? You have any idea how much I gave them, how much I did for them, how much I have to prove to them that I love them? You know how many fathers and mothers think that? Almost everyone. Because they're measuring the semer, they're measuring the wool according to what they're doing. But notice that wool is only valuable when it's on the person. So if you're not wearing the jacket, if they just gave it to you and it's sitting in the closet, it doesn't really do anything. You don't feel the wool hanging up on a hanger. You gotta put it on. So until the ahava is received by the recipient, it really doesn't have, it's nice that you love your children, but it's not the deposits we're looking for.
It's not the tzemel. A father and mother could think they've been giving tzemel to their kids for 100 years. And they're going to go see the account and it's going to say zero. What? Zero. I don't say I bought them houses. I bought them cars. I put them through school. I put their children to school. What are you talking about? What? I'll show you. The thing, I spent more money on them than on myself. What does that mean? They said, oh, deposits, zero. What? KP. They're all hanging up in the closet. It was never actually felt. The warmth never got there. It's an unbelievable reality. It's very frustrating when you don't know this. When you don't know this, you get very frustrated because you say to yourself, what could be? These people are just, they're sick people. Like, where's their brain? Where is their appreciation? And by the way, I'm not condoning their inability to appreciate the love that you showed them. I'm not protecting them. I'm not saying they're right. But you have to be a big enough person to realize that that could be their reality. You have to know that. That just because you give, it doesn't mean that someone receives it. I once had a story. It's a cute little story. I must have mentioned this once. This is going back maybe 20 years. So, it was moving day, and we're moving from Brooklyn to the summer. So we got the cars packed. All the kids are there. So you gotta pack the kids and all their stuff. And all the stuff, I mean, whatever, you know, moving is for those who move. So who's doing the work? Me and my wife. So by the time we actually got to our location and unloaded all the boxes on a very hot day, sweaty, exhausted, we're up from the morning. So now I'm carrying the boxes of my children's toys or whatever it is. And then as I have two boxes on me, walking out of the car, sweating at 4:30 p.m., my 9-year-old says, Dad, you want to have a catch? You know what that means when he says, Dad, you want to play? It means all that you did that day has zero to do with him. You moved him, you carried his clothes, you brought his toys, you rented a house for him. How much registered? Zero. You have to know that. So there are plenty of things that you could do for someone and they have no clue. It doesn't register. Again, I'm not saying he's right. I'm just telling you, that's the reality. So that's a very critical piece of information. If it doesn't land on them, it hasn't done the job. So the question isn't to give love before you expect fear. It's to make sure that love is received before you can expect fear. And that's a very hard job. How do you make sure that your ahava to your children, whether they're little, old, married, makes no difference. They could be 80. If you're still their father, you still have to worry about this. Makes no difference. How do you get that? How do you get from giving to receiving? How does the wool garment end up on their heart? Let me share with you a very powerful story on this subject that I think about very often, and especially when this subject comes up, that's the story my mind runs to. It's a great story I heard once, actually from Rabbi Salman, Allah Azzal.
It's a story of a young man who was learning in yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael. In Kfar Hasidim, there was a yeshiva. The Rosh Yeshiva was Rav Elia Lopian, Alav HaShalom, was an older man. The yeshiva had dormitories where the boys would sleep. And of course, they were expected to come to the Bet Midrash every morning at a certain time for tefillah. The Rosh Yeshiva, the older Rosh Yeshiva, would stand by the door of the Bet Midrash so that when the kids walk in, when the young men walk in, they would feel a certain responsibility to come on time, not to come too late. That was the way he did it day after day. Obviously, if a boy came in late, he feels bad, and he tries not to do it again. So now you have a young man who was late a couple of days, and he wanted to be there on time, but again, he woke up very late. To walk by the Rosh Yeshiva, coming in late, was embarrassing for him. Not to pray Shacharit is not an option. So, what's he going to do? He's stuck. So he realized that even though there's only one entrance to the Bet Midrash, but behind the Bet Midrash, there is a room. And that room has a window from the outside. So he climbed the window from the outside, came into the room, and walked into the Bet Midrash from the back, and he prayed and he left. On his way out, the Rosh Yeshiva looks at him and says, I didn't see you walking. When did you get here? So in a cute way, in a cute answer, he tells the Rosh Yeshiva, I got here by Ashrei. Now, Ashrei is also late, but there's a Ashrei in the beginning of the prayer, and there's an Ashrei that's after the Amidah. So he was being cute by saying Ashrei. The Rosh Yeshiva told him, which Ashrei? He obviously knew that he didn't come in the way he's supposed to. He told him, how did you get here? How did you walk in? I was here. So of course, he told him what he did. So he told him, you know, that's a crooked way to live life. And whatever words he told him, and here's the line that he told him. He said to him, if you only knew how much I love you, I would hit you right now. That's a great line. That's a very powerful one. You can't hit somebody. Not only with hands, we don't mean hitting that way. But you can't be strong with somebody until they know how much they are loved by you. He didn't say, when I love you, I can hit you. If you knew how much I love you, then I would be able to give you something strong. I could say something that might be a little bit shaky, shake you up a little. But since you don't know how much I love you, so I can't do that. That's the rule. When there's not enough ahava felt, then If there's not semer, you can't do pishtim. You first have to have the blanket of wool, and that blanket has to constantly be renewed and re-energized. And then you could put on the jacket called pishtim. If you put on two sweaters, one wool and one linen, it's not shadness. It's only when they're mixed together, the fibers. So therefore, this is our principle that we're learning today. Daresha, Semer, Upishtim, in that order. The question is, how do I ensure that my ahava, my love, reaches the recipient? That's a very big question. Be'ezat Hashem, we'll deal with that tomorrow. Have a good day.